So welcome. Our closing session panel has some terrific talent up here. Over the last couple of days, we've spent a lot of time going through key trends, use cases, verticals. And so taking into account what you've heard, if you've been here the whole time or your fresh perspective, we want to look at the government and military sector first, except Yehuda doesn't have clients that are in that, so I'm going to change the question for him a little bit. But let's say either government and military customers, or customers where security of the data is really the most important thing. And we'll start with Dan this time. Last piece of advice for folks in that vertical, or serving that vertical.
Advice for people serving the government and military in terms of cloud security. I think the biggest concern, and I think that this surfaced actually in Yehuda's presentation just now, is that while security and usability are theoretically a trade-off, a fundamental trade-off in software, I think in practice, talking about them in that way as like a strict dichotomy is letting our developers off too easy, because in very few software applications do you find the optimum blend of usability and security. And that's just a reflection on, you know, the amount of engineering cost you want to put into it. But I think in the government, all I mean is that the government is no exception. It's possible to have a very secure application that is convenient for users, and indeed, that can help keep the data more secure.
Good answer.
Thank you.
Bob?
I was looking at the fact that the government is virtually fleeing to the cloud right now.
Right.
The DoD has just issued a memorandum saying that the way forward is the cloud. We need to move to the cloud. We can't continue to afford the 3-year refresh that mm-hmm. has been going on over the last years, especially in the way that the last two wars have basically decimated our finances.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the fact that the cloud is as strong as it is now, and it's only going to get better as we continue to go forward. We've seen that as we've come to date. I think it's a good thing for government to leverage cloud services. That's the right way to move, but I do have kind of the same concern about the user, ensuring that the user can get to the information they need. We at Paragon are using Office 365, and there's been times when we've not been able to get to it to do the work we needed to do. So that's something that still needs to be an area of improvement going forward.
Okay. Mitchell.
I would absolutely agree with my esteemed colleagues. And coming from a Department of Defense-funded university-affiliated research center, the government is our sponsor. So we deal in this space quite a bit. We are looking at it from the systems engineering and the engineering management perspective, certainly of the volumes of information that they have to deal with, the security of that information. One of the key things, I think, in moving to the cloud, and again, I would salute the heavyweights in the industry, you know, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Apple, and everybody else who's very much, taking leading edge in cloud technology, as well as all the small business infrastructure and all of the players in this area, and certainly setting the standard. With the government, they are very concerned about where the data is stored. If that has to go offshore US, that is problematic because we can no longer control who necessarily has access to that data, who could go to, you know, into a server room and take a look at those things. So in complete agreement, we are basically shifting the cost onto the industry. I would also like to point out, I find it extremely interesting in that, in the past 40 to 50 years, we've gone from, the mainframes where our data was up in a cloud type architecture, even though we didn't call it a cloud at that time, down to personal machines where, okay, we want control of our data, and now shifting the other direction again. So I think we're gonna see this cycle Not continuously, but certainly there will be concerns in that, and where do we draw that dividing line of which architectures and which data are we comfortable with putting up in the cloud, and what has to stay in-house?
Good points. So, among other clients that where security is the key thing, last piece of advice for them, maybe we didn't give all the advice before.
Piece of advice for security?
Yeah.
Yeah, like our, you know, my esteemed panelists have also mentioned that, I mean, there are a lot of times when you put too much security, you start losing the product, you know, the efficiency of how things work, and that's just, it's always just going to be the trade-off. And the way that Mitchell just described the evolution of business computing, it's funny. We when we talk to people, especially the people that I talk to, are probably you know, baby boomers or, you know, maybe a little younger, and they remember these mainframe days. And so the way we describe it, actually, this is not security related, and I apologize, but it's just an interesting thing. We describe it as some sort of like systems of government or lack thereof. I mean, talking about it, it's a government analogy, but like the mainframe was like the monarchy. Like people couldn't really do a whole lot. They could do what the queen told them to do, but they really couldn't do much with it. Then the people revolted, and so we decided to have PCs.
Yep.
And PCs were working great. Everyone could do what they wanted, how they wanted, what, you know, where they wanted. And the problem was, it started when we started to do this networking thing, where everything was connected to one another, so that when one person, you know, downloaded a virus or overloaded a server, it would affect everyone. Yeah. So we went from monarchy to anarchy. And I think what cloud computing is trying to do is to sort some sort of balance, trying to bring some semblance of democracy. If that, you know, and we know how difficult that can be, even in political region. And to cloud computing, to computing, in that people are able to do the work that they want to do, they have the freedom to do the work that they want to do without the risks of just crashing the entire system. And so I think that is another way in which cloud computing can actually help in security, because a lot of times, you know, if you have these phishing scams, I think the gentleman, I don't know your name, but Bob said, you know, the phishing scam, it ended up being a phishing scam. So with a lot of cloud applications, especially some of the private clouds, they don't allow administrative rights. So that phishing scam would have never occurred, for example. So I think the cloud is helping in that security. I think it's just the name cloud, and a lot of people are unfamiliar with what that means, especially, you know, people that are not technical. And so that's what it makes a lot of people very nervous. But essentially, I think the cloud is definitely the way to go, just because of better systems, more controlled systems, more centralized systems. And then ultimately, the more you can proactively manage it, the more secure it'll be.
Excellent. So let's move on to the next vertical we've been covering, media and entertainment sector. And for this one, if you don't have customers, direct experience, then let's think about where the end user experience is the most important factor. Another one of Yehuda's points. Let's start with Bob on this one. So the last advice to what's next to watch out for in the media and entertainment space?
My whole history since I've retired and stopped trying to be a weather guesser in the military has always been information security. So from my aspect, no matter what the next big thing is, one of the pitfalls is always going to be failure to consider security in the development process. It is so much easier to create security within the system than it is to find an implement that you can bolt on later on.
Right.
And by doing it that way, by building it into the system, you're also going to raise profitability for the system.
It's important. File sharing certainly taught some of the record industry folks that.
Absolutely.
Mitchell?
So we have no customers really in this space, but from the end user perspective of user of a lot of these technologies, I would agree with one of the earlier panelists that there's a certain level of frustration when things go wrong and they're offline. Certainly I would acknowledge the media and entertainment industry for being the leaders in forcing the adoption of the newest technologies, because they really do. And the government and every other sector appears to follow suit because, again, you're reaping the benefits of the cost efficiencies by having that architecture and everything already in existence. That's pretty much all I have to say on this topic.
Understandable. Scott had to catch a plane. He was going to be our
heavy anchorage. You heard of, when the end user experience is the most important factor?
It's ultimately the most important factor because ultimately that's what it is, but everything is going, if it's insecure, it's going to impact the end user. So ultimately, that is the end user. End user is probably the most important factor, but everything relates to it. But we're looking at as we move forward, everything's have kind of melded into one huge technology. We have cloud-based TV shows and, things of that nature. And so as these things kind of meld together, you'll have, TV shows on mobile devices, and we talked about you bring your own device policies, and so these are going to continue to meld into one another. So I was talking about the media, and how things work. The more comfortable people are in using these systems, the better it's going to take off. I think that's why I think Apple was so successful in its introduction of the iPhone, because it was just so simple. And then once people started getting a little bit more comfortable with the way, phone and cloud technologies work, that's when the Galaxy was able to step in and say, hey, wait a second, this is a little more difficult to look, but you're used to it by now.
Yes, right.
And so that's what's going to happen. People are becoming more comfortable, and the more comfortable they are, the more familiar they are, the more comfortable they are, and that's the way it's going to go. And I think, obviously security is the key, but the end user is the key, but everything plays a factor in it.
Last word from Dan on this one.
Let me preface this by saying that I do listen to terrestrial radio, I watch TV, and I occasionally buy compact discs. But those companies have been, traditional media and entertainment companies have been the worst example of dinosaurs lumbering along and trying to protect the existing failing business model.
Yep.
Rather than pitching out the old and trying to figure out what the new is, in terms of internet and social. You compare like to the military, where the military has the excuse that they're saddled with protecting the nation. They're doing an important job. They have to proceed cautiously. Those companies don't have that excuse. The only excuse they have is protecting the existing revenue stream, which is shrinking. And so as a shareholder, you have to think, wow, you got to do better than that. And it's been, going back since Napster and even before then, there just hasn't been anything impressive coming out of that space. And I just think that's a shame.
And user-generated content. Really, social media took off where traditional media didn't play as much.
Yeah.
I wish Scott was here, but I guess he's going to talk about the concern, really, about the amount of the internet traffic being dominated by just two media services today. 70% of the traffic on the internet is Netflix and YouTube. When you add those two together, especially during prime, television consumption hours.
And what makes up the rest are things we don't want to talk about, right? So,
well, exactly.
Yeah, so, it's not a good story.
But so what's going to happen? That trajectory is not a terrific one. How quickly that came up, but it's still going. So they've got to get better at the compression and the allocation of space. It's a whole network provider issue that, if Scott were here, we'd talk about. That we should get that point on the record, too. The third question, and this was the last sector we covered, healthcare and life sciences. And for those who aren't in there, I would say reliability as distinct from security would be the customers where reliability, where the fact that it actually is on now when I need it. Comments on those types of customers or on healthcare and life sciences if you have a specific one. And let's start with Mitchell.
So in this sector, again, from the university-affiliated research center perspective, we don't have necessarily clients other than looking at the Veterans Administration, which has had their own healthcare issues as well. So we are looking into assisting them in some aspect. But I'd also point out that Stevens, just to get this on record, has a Center for Healthcare Innovation that we work with the healthcare industry, of course, to try and promote the better ways to utilize the products and services and cloud. I think that this is, as the last panel said, an area that is wide open for growth. It is proceeding cautiously from the aspect of, let's face it, doctors and healthcare providers typically aren't on the front end or in the forefront of the technology. okay, they're concerned about medical services and providing the best medical care to their patients. And we look to the hospital administrators and the administrative staff in the private practices really to administer that. Again, I think this comes back to a cost issue, and eventually they don't want to be administrating their own servers. They don't want to have to control and maintain all of that data. They would much rather have it out and open, which also opens up the possibilities, again, beyond for users to be able to go in and access their own health records. Then it comes down to, the point of privacy. There has to be the procedures, policies, security factors in place in order to do that. The benefits are numerous because you'll be able to access it anywhere. So if you're on vacation, you know, across the country and something happens to you, the doctor that you go and see in the hospital has access to your health records and can check if you're not able to speak, you know, which prescription medication are you on? What was your diagnosis before? On and on.
Good answer. Yehuda?
Well, I mean, I we can talk about, you know, information systems with regard to healthcare, but we can also talk about, again, I want to go back to that confluence of multiple systems. I mean, for example, you know, the TV and the personal devices. Cloud is now kind of merging into healthcare services, not just the IT servers or network devices that serve healthcare. For example, a lot of there are a lot of different devices that are inside a person's body that can be monitored and can be run through some sort of Wi-Fi or some sort of connectivity. And so as these things are going to start to blend together, it's all going to be one big kind of mush pot of different technologies, and they're all going to have to interconnect.
Okay.
And that's the key, I think. And so, hacking can be scary when you're talking about someone's data, but when you're talking about someone's, let's say,
heartbeat
or someone's like liver, or that really gets scary.
Yeah. Okay, Dan?
I think there's kind of a corollary point to that, which I think also goes to what kind of some of the companies that you wouldn't even think about as healthcare companies doing use your data based on apps on your iPhone, and how to manage your diet, how to manage your sleep patterns. How to manage your pills and your medicines and your supplements, wearables. And I think we haven't seen the convergence of hacking your pacemaker and your Nike number of steps I've taken band, as well as your EMR. But I think that confluence is coming, and I think that that's fascinating, because I think that one thing, just for me personally, that I've always disliked about medical care is just the lack of, I don't think there's an intentional lack of transparency, but to me it's always seemed inherently not transparent. I just don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And I think when you have a lot more access to user-generated and user-controlled data, and you can actually be in a position to actually share that with your physician and vice versa, I think that could be a very compelling change.
For sure. Bob?
I would tend to agree. I mean, I get tired of the number of times that I go to a different doctor, a specialist or something, and I have
start
to continue
again.
To start over with that medical record once again. Yeah. That will be wonderful when we get to the time when that information is already there for them. I fail to see why, when I have asked my doctor, my primary care provider, to give me a consult, why they don't accept that as my permission to move my medical data to that doctor.
Right.
They'll send them the x-rays.
Yeah.
They'll send them the lab tests.
Yep.
But they won't send them my history.
Right.
That makes no sense to me.
And just the therapeutic value of it's a big data analytical thing of taking the history of a whole lot of patients, looking for trends where we haven't seen
certainly
health concerns that pop up, and you could start to predict those. Dan had me think of one that when you can another big data one, when you can combine that stuff you're talking about, what kind of nutrition you're putting in your body, what kind of habits you have, connecting that to your insurance provider. And that's one that people haven't talked about too much, but do you have any insights on any unseen connections that we're going to see as a result of this increasing amount of data from our different body parts and our habits and our personal habits, and who that might be accessible to, besides the hacking thing. Any other thoughts? Dan?
Well, the Big Brother, obviously there's the Big Brother risk there,
yeah.
Which is, I think, unfortunate and inevitable, and something that has to be addressed.
Right.
Again, just to try to look on the positive, the potential side, I think that using data, using the cloud, using the miniaturization of technology at the same time to take a more holistic view of health, and I think it's also timely because I think that there are some unfortunate trends in this country and around the world about people neglecting their health. And I think that this, again, I think it's timely that we may have an opportunity to give people more actionable data about taking responsibility for their own health. And I think that, of course, again, there are the Big Brother risks, but we can't not take advantage of that opportunity. I think it's critical for humanity to take ownership. You know, every person has to take ownership of that responsibility. And I think the technology actually has an opportunity here to really support that in a meaningful way.
Good answer. Let's move on. One of the trends we looked at in the last couple of days was mobile cloud, or, the increasing number of smaller and smaller and, multiplying number of devices that are connected. And now the Internet of Things and maybe Internet of Body Parts, we got into pacemakers and liver monitors with Yehuda. What do you think will be the next thing we do see in the next, say, next 12 months that's going to surprise us about this move to mobility in the mobile cloud? Start with Bob.
Well, my personal opinion is that in this area of computing is moving so quickly that I spoke earlier about computers that 50 years ago were mainframes, tubes, wires. We're talking about palm tops or iPads or smartphones now that have more capabilities than the computer that ran a NORAD region 50 years ago.
True.
So I'm not totally sure where this is going to go, but it's going to be exciting watching it go forward. I think if we can just keep on point and make sure, as Yehuda said, that we need to have those pieces lined up so the management is in there, mm-hmm. the systems communicate well with each other. From a security standpoint, we want to see that because we don't want to have just any inherited or occurrence of vulnerabilities because they don't work effectively together. The people are, as they're looking at designing the different software, as they're looking at designing and developing the different systems, they're looking at that aspect so that they are less vulnerable. Okay.
Mitchell is staying focused on mobile cloud specifically.
Yeah, so in mobile cloud specifically, looking at that area, I would agree. We're just, again, at the tip of the iceberg with the devices that have been created over the past decade or less.
Right.
And I believe that the scalability of the applications, the things that you would normally have run on, that are currently run on the desktops and everywhere else, all of that has moved and is continuing to move to the cloud, and that's going to be a lot better. I think from the standpoint of content creation, and this is where I've seen the argument a lot before, you still generally want your laptop, your desktop, in order to do a content creation type of architecture. It's very hard, especially folks, my age or maybe a little bit younger and certainly older, we don't type as fast with our thumbs as our kids do,
yeah.
Or any of the new generation is growing up to do. So the fact of having to sit down and, boy, I really need to create content on this smaller device, mm-hmm. and get it up into a mobile type of cloud architecture where I could access it anywhere isn't overly appealing to me because it is more difficult for me to enter that. And I think some of the things that we're going to see is easier ways to create that content as we move forward from these mobile platforms in order to enable it in a mobile cloud environment.
An excellent point. Besides being sensors and sort of inert data collection, you got a very good point. Yehuda?
Well, when you talk about the evolution of, you know, technology in general, computer systems in general, I mean, what typically happens is someone creates something, and then someone finds a way to hack into it. So I think that as we get into smaller and more mobile devices and devices that are not going to be necessarily maintained by the overall company, right. Even though there are, you know, so that's exactly what's happening is now that things are becoming more mobile, more individualized. I think new services that support security services that support the overseeing of these multiple devices are going to be created over time, and then as technology evolves, you know, so do hackers, and right behind them are people that, you know, that try to circumvent the risks that come with hackers. And so I think from a mobile device standpoint, I think, you know, the more mobile devices, more devices are becoming more mobile via cloud, I think the more you're going to see these different security companies kind of pop up. And I think, you know, honestly, mm-hmm. that's probably why BlackBerry's still somewhat in business, because of the way that they can do that. And so so that's how I see it.
Dan, last word on this one.
I think that what will be interesting, the interesting inflection point in wearables will be when they cross into mainstream as fashionable. So I'm talking about, you know, the incarnation that is essentially the dead opposite of Google Glass, right? Something that like a sane person would actually want to wear out in public, right? Something that is, you know, more so a nice watch than it is a computer that happens to be wrapped around your wrist. Apple, I think, is leading the charge right now, but the watches that I've seen that are coming out this year aren't it.
Not there.
It's maybe N minus two generations from being it.
Yeah.
But anyway, what happens then is among suddenly being a huge security target, but you know, of course, there's the pro and the con. Suddenly you have a lot of people that are finally interested in buying that. You kind of reach critical mass in terms of cost and in terms of, you know, a lot of different competitors coming out with really compelling offerings. But suddenly you need an antivirus for everything you're wearing in your ears and on your wrist, right? So it's like, well, we got to work on the trade-off there.
Right.
Yeah.
Good one. So the other thing we looked at, DevOps, which is kind of internal changes in the way organizations that migrate to the cloud perform various functions, and we were keeping it pretty internal here, but and they're definitely happening at an accelerating rate. But there's also the need for reality therapy among industry proponents, as Yehuda articulated. So, question: what's your view of the cloud actually changing the way businesses perform their functions? Let's start with Yehuda on this one.
Yeah, I mean, they already have changed. I mean, companies are now looking towards, I think there are two reasons. I mean, I think the cloud would have evolved even a lot quicker than it already has, and the two reasons why I don't think they have is the two ends of the business spectrum. On the one hand, you have the business management group, the upper management group that are just, they don't understand what the cloud is, and so they're just not going to make that move. On the other hand, you have the internal IT people that have their kingdom, and they understand that no one else knows what they're doing, and so they're just building up a kingdom, becoming more and more important within the company. And so I think those two things are actually slowing the evolution of the cloud. When in actuality, if people look at the facts and kind of see how it's actually worked in reality, I think, you know, it would move even quicker.
Dan,
I think to me, you know, talking about DevOps and the change that's had on, you know, IT decision making and adoption of the cloud, I would say that the only reason we've seen to move to the cloud is business velocity. And business velocity is exactly the reason that you should move to the cloud. Now, to Yehuda's point, I'm not saying, you know, pack everything up and off to the cloud and woohoo, good luck, right? But that is the opportunity to move much faster and to beat your competitors, right? Mm-hmm. Everything else kind of falls from that. Okay, well, what are the strategic bits that we can use, that we can put there piecemeal, methodically, to start to gain some of those advantages, right? So do the right thing, but companies that aren't doing that are getting left behind.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Bob?
Well, as we got better in business and we got multinational companies, and it started out with national companies, first of all, and they became big,
yep.
And they had centralized computing systems. Then it became that they grew and spread throughout the country and still had a centralized computing system. But when they went multinational, then they had to be decentralized. they had to have more computing being done in the area where they actually sure. existed. So in the advent of the cloud now, we can go back to a centralized computing solution for multinational companies.
Mm, interesting.
That because yep. they're going to be able to reach the data. The one of the key points is they can reach the data from wherever they are.
Right.
Whether they're working at home late on a Saturday night, glass of wine on the nightstand like Mark likes to have, and his computer on his lap, and we press on from there, get some work done, have a good evening, and then or whether you're in your office, you know, 5 days a week.
It's a very
you
good
can
insight.
Reach the data yeah. from wherever you happen to be. And so that's probably the best, one of the biggest advantages I see. And I think by centralizing once again, I think the security piece is going to fall in place fairly easily.
Sure.
Yes.
Last word from Mitchell.
So I would agree that the cloud has been certainly transformative in the way that businesses do their operations. I would just point out that government contractors, large industry contractors, speed of adoption is slower than it would be in let's say, more lean and agile organizations that have the capability to do it. And of course, for good reason. They're worried about where that data is going to end up. How do they protect it? So all the security measures. And not only that, they don't necessarily want everybody to have access to that data 24/7. It's good that you could log on and you know see your email and things like that. But there are some things that they want kept, although maybe not classified, but certainly work on in a work environment because they don't want the possibility of, okay, it's downloaded to a mobile device or it's downloaded right. to a home machine. And I would point that out also from the industry contractor side as well for large government contractors, same thing. There was a big push a few years ago, are we going cloud, are we not going cloud? And the decision was made certainly in one organization I was involved with that they would stay pretty much in-house provider of their own private cloud type of environment because, again, security of the data and where it ends up.
Right. The third trend we looked at was this fact that with all these more and more distributed devices connected, we're generating reams of data about every aspect of mm-hmm. online as well as offline behavior. So the big data phenomenon is certainly very real, very important. What do you see as the next breakthrough in the next year or so in that area? Start with Dan on this one.
I think that big data is sort of a misleading term because I think the way it's typically used is to describe the next generation of tools. So, yeah, you have a lot of data, but when you call that big data, it means that you can't get your hands around it. What you need is a next generation of tools, right? Which isn't really useful.
Yeah.
The problem I think most organizations have is that the previous generation of tools, they haven't utilized fully. And it's actually not that they need to, you know, write some sort of data processing or some dashboard on 1 terabyte of data. It's that they need to do it on like 100 megabytes of data and nobody bothered to do it yet. And so we still see a lot of opportunities from a consulting perspective that have, that maybe start with a discussion about big data, but it turns out really have nothing to do with the dependency on the next generation of tools. Really what they need is, you know, the customer needs some visibility into their data, and the current generation of tools will be perfectly fine for that.
Good points. Bob?
Some believe that big data is going to be as important to business as the internet. This is based on the belief that if you have more data, then you can do more analysis, and then you can come up with better results.
Sure.
But there's going to be, if this is the case, you're going, like was said, the amount of data is growing exponentially. So to do the analysis of it, you're going to have a need for speed. You're going to be able need to develop better tools, as Dan was saying. And I think that this is going to ensure the availability when needed. It's going to be provide a sufficient variety of data. Structured numerical data within traditional databases, unstructured text, email, video, to conduct the analysis. Mm-hmm. But I think these areas are all going to be areas where we're going to have a breakthrough going forward.
Fair enough. Mitchell?
I'm in complete agreement. I think it boils down to, big data is here to stay, although we don't necessarily all agree with the term.
Yep.
That exponential explosion in the amount of data created daily, and I think a report even 10 years ago came out that the amount of data created in the past decade has been more since the beginning of the, from 1900 throughout the end of the century, which is just incredible. So the tools and analysis techniques, I think what this offers is the ability for a lot of researchers to go in and refine those techniques to be applicable in this field. In other words, create new methods, processes, tools, statistical techniques. It opens up a brand new door because you're really seeing different views and different ways you could layer this data, different ways you could collaborate with others, what relates to what, so the correlation of those data sets.
Okay, you had a last word on this one?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, like everyone else has mentioned pretty much, and I think a good example is the digital oil field. I mean, in Houston, I mean, that's huge. I mean, what's happening is they're not just you're not just digging new wells, they're going back to old wells, and they're trying to redig those, and they're trying to transmit data back to headquarters, and what are they doing with that data? How are they storing it? What's going on? And I think, when we just talked earlier about cloud computing and how that relates, I think that relates perfectly. That's the perfect confluence of, all this data coming in, what to do with that data, where to store it, how to access it. That's where cloud computing comes in, and I think it'll be wonderful.
And asking the right questions. I mean, I think there's a whole need for the marketers to play a big role in this stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
To help drive that process.
Oh, certainly.
We're at the last question. Did any of the many members of the audience here today have any final questions for the panel before
I throw? No, I have a question. Uh-oh.
Mr. Clark.
Yeah. Is this being recorded?
Yes.
Very good, Bob. Thank you. That was my question.
All right, the wrap up. Just briefly, start with Yehuda, we'll just go right down to Dan. Any last advice for the cloud service providers on how to do better in the next year? Last advice for
you. Yeah, I mean, my advice was pretty much reflected in the, that short 15-minute presentation.
Which was excellent.
Which was, thank you. It was just, you have to consider, a lot, pretty much the whole picture. And I think all that picture ends with the end user. Because, whether it's security, whether it's reliability, whether it's the ability to use all these great tools and big data that we're all talking about, you're going to have to kind of consider what the end user and how they're going to adopt it. Because as quickly as they adopt it, that's how quickly we'll be able to. I mean, we can churn it out, left and right. But if people aren't going to adopt it, people aren't going to use it, then what good is it? And they're going to end up having companies spending huge amounts of money on big data, things of that nature, and people not using it, and that can run for disaster. So the more you look at the, who's using it, how they're using it, and how they all integrate with one another, I think that's the key to success.
Okay.
Mitchell? My only point would be to say I completely agree, and also to the cloud providers, to all the developers, keep innovating. I mean, keep working with the customers, keep developing new and innovative ideas, new methods, new processes, new tools that we could use to explore and keep on growing this area, because it's here to stay and it's only going to get better.
Bob?
Once again, my area of expertise is information security, now called cybersecurity. The background that I have, it tells me that it's much easier, as I mentioned before, to develop the security into the system as you create it, rather than to bolt it on. That's where you're going to see the profitability, is because you're not going to have to go back and fix things by clapping on some other type of a tool on the outside.
Excellent advice. Last word from Dan.
I don't think it's so much advice to the cloud providers other than just point out, I think one of the reasons it's such an exciting space right now is because there is so much competition. It's always great to be in a technology area where the providers are competing for your business, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Sure.
It's great that there hasn't been a bunch of consolidation. Obviously, there aren't a lot of players at the very top, but there are enough that it's whatever the economists would call a dynamic market, right? And that's great. So I just look forward to that not changing anytime soon.
Good one. Thank you very much, panelists.
Thank you.
Thanks for